morning, Tony Harris joining.
Good morning, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Tony, just so you don't feel like speaking into a silent phone, there are a bunch of us on here. But we're not talking for some reason. This is so unusual for us.
This is the new silent GNSO council, you see. It's not the chatty names council.
We're missing Jeff Williams on the call.
Has Jeff ever been on the
On this call, no, but Jeff has been on two of my... I've been on a transfers call, and he's been on at least one, if not... I think he's been on two of our Who Is outreach calls. Right, Glenn?
Jeff Williams on the outreach calls, yes. Has he been on the other calls too?
No, he's been on the transfers outreach and on the Who Is outreach calls, right, Tony? I know Jeff was on transfers, and I thought he was on one of our Who Is outreach calls as well, but I could be wrong. I know he was on transfers.
Yeah, there's somebody else. Hopped on sending mails to everybody. TechnoCT is the mail address.
Yes, that's Jim Fleming.
That's Jim Fleming? Oh. I filtered that because I was getting 10 a day.
I didn't hear you.
There's really not much to do with Jim Fleming other than to filter him.
Oh, I thought unless you were interested in the get rich quick opportunity of reselling IPv 12, 14, or 32.
Yeah, well, I've got a few Stargates myself, but I'm not sure what to do with them.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Ellen Shankman joining. Hello, Ellen. Oh, hi, Glenn. How you doing?
Fine.
Good morning, Glenn, and good morning, Ellen. It's Marilyn.
Oh, hi, Marilyn. How are you?
Good.
Hello, everybody. It's Laurence. I just joined as well.
Hi, Laurence.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
You're probably getting close to quorum, aren't we?
We've got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. Louis makes 9.
Okay, so we just need one more. Is that right, Glenn?
Louis.
Yes.
Louis is an attendee, right?
Yes, I am.
Not a... And we need how many?
We need 10 to be quorate.
So we're 2 away, right, Glenn?
One away, surely.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
There are apologies from Tony Holmes, who gives his proxy to Tony Harris. Harold Felt and Eric might not be on the call, but they have both given proxies to Chun. And J. Scott Evans will be probably not on for the first hour because he had a client meeting. He's given his proxy to Ellen and then to Laurence. And Roger may have to go off. And he's given his proxy to Jordan and then to Carrie.
So we don't actually have anyone else...
No, that means Grant should be with us. Chun, I guess.
Yes. On the line.
Chun.
Are you there, Ken Stubbs?
Ken Stubbs.
Yeah.
At that very moment.
That was very magical.
It was. Okay, so we're now quorate. Is that correct?
We've still got.
Yeah, you're quorate by my count.
Okay, you want to just do a bit of a roll call then, Glenn? Who have we got on the call?
Fine. Philip.
Yes.
Philip Shepherd.
Yep.
Bruce Tonkin. Marilyn. Jordan Buchanan. Greg Ruth. Louis Tuton. Carrie Carp. Ellen. Laurence. And Ken.
Tony Harris.
And Tony Harris, sorry.
That's 9.
Right.
Don't you count proxies for the roll call?
Hang on, I've got 10 already.
No, 10.
Yeah, I've got 10. I've got Ken, Philip, Wooden, Greg, Carrie, Ellen, Tony, and Laurence. That's 9.
I'm sorry, did you say me? Marilyn?
Ken, Marilyn, Jordan, Greg Ruth, Carrie, Ellen, Tony, Harris, and Laurence. Have I missed anyone?
Did you count yourself?
Bruce makes 9 to my count.
I have 10 now.
I have 10.
And hit. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can't. But I just serve Stephen.
Okay. Then if we just pick up on the agenda. There's quite a few mostly administrative things in this meeting. First, we've got the approval of the last minutes, an update on progress on the transfers and who is implementation committees, an update on the deletes task force, an update on the EDRP task force, an update on GNSO budget, really looking at what input we can provide to ICANN for the 1st of July 2003 to 30th of June 2004 year. We've also been requested by the ICANN board to comment on the process for new GTLDs, item 7. Item 8 is discussion about the appointment of 2 seats on the new ICANN board. And that's it. So are there any other agenda items anyone would like to add?
Yeah, Bruce, this is Tim Stutz, a minor point of order. Jay Scott sent an email out indicating he would probably not be able to be on the call in the first hour, so why don't we move item number 5 to the last item. Hopefully he'll be here in the second hour and can give us an update on the UDRP.
Yes, I'll do that. Thank you, Ken. Any other updates on the agenda?
This is Roger Cochetti. Just to let you know that I will be on for a few minutes now, and then I'll have to cut off, and I'll rejoin later. I know that the budget item is on. If I am not, it won't take very long when it comes up. But if I'm not on the call at the time it comes up, I'd ask that it just be deferred until I return, because I will be coming back on.
Okay, we'll do that. Thanks, Roger.
I'll be happy to kick it off by moving that the summary of the last minutes as posted there be approved. And,
okay, do we have a seconder to approve the minutes?
Yes, I'll do that, Philip.
Okay, all those in favour? Sorry, what was it?
Yeah. Aye.
Aye.
Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, the minutes are passed. The next item is an update on progress on transfers and who is implementation committees. I can report that both are working very actively. There has been one teleconference last week on there's been 2 teleconferences on the transfers implementation committee. The sense I'm having at the moment is that the recommendations are implementable, but there are quite a few small improvements that have been suggested by the registries and registrars so far, and they will all be incorporated into a fairly detailed implementation report. On the topic of who is, we've had one teleconference last week. We're having another teleconference in about 6 hours' time. And that will be to go through the comments that have been received so far. I think the general feedback I've had on both those committees is one of the problems that's come up quite often is that a lot of people haven't actually read the recommendations of either transfers and who is, and they're usually the ones that are complaining about them. And once people become clear on what exactly the recommendations are, there's usually a lot less concern. And then it really moves on to clarification, improving the wording, looking at some of the detailed implementation. So I think they're moving along well, and I'm expecting to
complete the implementation reports on time by the end of January. Do I have questions or comments on that process?
Bruce, it's Marilyn. I would only make one comment, and that is that task forces themselves are looking forward to having that input so that they can then incorporate it and we can move forward with posting a revised final report for the transfers task force so that we can have our February confirmation of that. And, of course, we'll be also revising the recommendation from the Who Is task force to incorporate those recommendations as well to meet the February time frame.
Okay. For just to let you know the process, by the end of next week, there will be draft reports available, and they will be discussed in teleconferences of the implementation committees next week, and then they will be finalised in the following week. So what I would imagine happening, and I think on the Who Is Implementation Committee, I'd had a request for a joint call with the Who Is Task Force, and I suggest that joint call occur next week when we've actually got a draft implementation report to discuss.
Why don't you and I take the scheduling up offline with Tony? We actually have a guest speaker next from the Security Advisory. We have the Security Advisory Committee, but why don't we take the scheduling up?
Of course, yes. But just the process point of view,
yep.
A draft will certainly be available by the end of next week for consideration by the relevant task forces.
Marilyn,
Bruce.
This is Louis.
Uh-huh.
Bruce?
Yeah, I'll put Louis in the call. Who else was that?
John.
John, okay. Lewis, go ahead, Lewis.
Just a quick question. With regard to the composition of Who Is Implementation Committee,
yes.
Maybe I remember at least a few persons from users could be present in that implementation committee. Then, just now, unfortunately, I cannot confirm that any non-commercial members are not present in that implementation committee.
Okay,
My question is whether still we non-commercial users constituency have any slot to join in that implementation committee.
Okay, there is already Thomas Rosler is a member on that implementation committee.
But Rosler is not a representative of non-commercial users.
Okay, he's a representative.
Because he doesn't have any member just now in the implementation committee.
Okay.
Well, neither does the IP.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, the way that's structured, Sean, is that it's looking at the implementation from, whether it's feasible to implement from a registry and a registrar point of view. And then there's a liaison through to the Who Is Task Force itself. And the liaison with the Who Is Task Force, there's two members. In fact, there's three. There is the co-chair of the Who Is Task Force, which is Tony Harris. There is Steve Metallitz, and there is Thomas Rosler. They are liaising with the Who Is Task Force, and the intent is that a joint call will be held with the Who Is Task Force, and I understand that there are non-commercial members on the Who Is Task Force itself. So that's how that's structured.
You're absolutely right, but I received one message from Marilyn that the person as one representative of our non-commercial users constituency joining in that Who Is Task Force doesn't accept to represent to that implementation committee. Then such an what is happening in Who Is Task Force has never been reported to our constituency, so our constituents members didn't get any information what's going on there. So we couldn't confirm whether somebody could be represented in that implementation committee or not. So my question is, Steer, if we can help some, a member in that implementation committee, we want to recommend somebody. Is it available, Steer?
I personally have no problem. There's really only going to be two more teleconferences, and the all the postings and comments are being posted to a public list as well, which is the there's an archived mailing list for the implementation committee, which includes the minutes and I believe also MP3 recordings of all the calls. And all the postings are available online as well, so it is fully open. But I have no objection if you wish to nominate somebody to sit in on those calls. That's not a problem.
Bruce.
Marilyn,
yes, go ahead.
I'd like to respond to something that Chun said, because I think this is a challenge for your constituency and perhaps others. The non-commercial constituency has... had a member on the Who Is Task Force, and of course each of the representatives is responsible for feedback from constituency. I think what happened was you had a change when Sarah Andrews left and turned it over to Ruchika, and I did ask for confirmation from the constituency if that was your replacement. Ruchika has been participating. I met with her over Christmas. I came in off holiday and met with her over Christmas to give her a briefing. But I'm not aware, of course, of what kind of feedback, nor I think it's Tony, my co-chair, of what feedback goes from your representatives to your constituency. If you need some help, she's new, on feedback, a call with your constituency regarding the status of the work of the Who Is, you could ask Ruchika to work with me to set something up, and I'm sure that we could accommodate that.
Marilyn, I think your account is appropriate in some sense. Then you should understand that in this type of international communication, there could be very different kinds of problems happening. So given the importance of the issue at hand, I think we hopefully have some representative of our constituency in implementation committee. Okay?
Right, I was making an offer to also try to get some of the task force members to help to brief your constituency on the Who Is report if you needed that.
Okay.
Might I make a remark, Marilyn?
Oh.
As co-chair, I don't think that the people who are working on the implementation committee from the Who Is task force were chosen based on what constituency they belong to. Steve Metalitz issued the draft for recommendations on the accuracy issues, and Thomas Roessler was heavily involved in the bulk access, and I'm there as a co-chair really, and the registrars and registry are the people who are actually making comments on whatever they see is involved in the actual implementation of these recommendations. Okay.
But sure, and let me support Tony in that. But I think what Chun is saying is you're going to give Bruce the name of someone, Chun, to add to the implementation committee, and so that addresses your constituency's concern. And then you have that other offer if you want to take it up about the report overall.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'll come back to Louis. I think you're in the queue.
Yes, thank you, Bruce, and let me go just very slightly off of this topic just to inquire about really more on the Who Is Task Force. I note that in the December 14th, at the December 14th then Names Council meeting, there was a resolution that the comment period was to be held open until this meeting for additional constituency comments, and I just wanted to understand what process was contemplated from here on, and also whether any constituency comments had been received in that period.
Tony, do you want me to comment on, or do you want to do this?
Go ahead.
We have not received any formal constituency comments from any of the constituencies that I am aware of, and Glenn can validate that. We did also open the list for general comments up until January the 9th. We did receive a number of,
right here.
Of comments through that mechanism.
Yeah, I think, Louis, there are probably two parallel processes. There is a process looking at the actual implementation of the recommendations that have been put forward so far, and then the other issue is developing an issues report on the areas that there aren't yet recommendations. And so the WHOIS task force is still working on an issues report and is still having meetings on those areas such as consistency and other aspects of who is. And an implementation committee is looking specifically at the recommendations that have been issued so far. So certainly the registries and registrars are focusing their efforts at the moment on the implementation of the recommendations so far. And in that implementation report, I think there will be some comments on some areas for further work as well.
I was really looking at what may be a third area, and perhaps I have a misunderstanding of the December resolution of the Names Council. But the Names Council delayed acceptance of the policy recommendations in the November 30th WHOIS report, and it did so to allow additional time for consideration by the constituencies until this call that is going on right now.
Yes,
and
correct.
And surely the consideration of those additional comments would be outside the scope of the implementation assessment group. So my question really is, how are those to be addressed so that the council can indeed consider whether or not to accept policy recommendations in the November 30th report?
This is Tom. With regard to the question addressed by Louis, I think I remember in last call, we all participants in this call thought that many things should be confirmed in concerned with the implementation progress. So we organized the implementation committee because many elements recommended in policy document could have some problems if it is applied to implementation. So I think here our policy document is open to be changed in the progress of the implementation committee. This is my understanding. Is there something different to understanding?
Yeah, I think I'd also just to clarify, this is Bruce Tonkin speaking again. Certainly in the minutes it talked about potentially approving the recommendations themselves based on feedback that might have been received between the meeting on the 14th of December and the meeting today. My view is, based on the work of the implementation committee so far, that there would need to be changes to certainly the wording of those recommendations, because the wording right now is open to a few different interpretations, and hence we don't believe it's implementable right now. So I would see what would be happening is the implementation committee will come up with some suggested changes which will need to be considered by the WHOIS task force at the same time as considering any other input that might have been received in that public comment process, and that would be completed by the end of this month in total. So then at the next Names Council call in February, we would be approving the recommendations themselves, and we'd also be approving the final report to go through to the board. Would that match your understanding, Marilyn and Tony?
Well, actually, before I respond to your question, I I really need to support Julie's interpretation of the resolution that we enacted. The resolution about leaving it open for constituency comment came in response to written comments from the registry constituency and from Chun, as I recall. We need to separate the issues here. So, first of all, there was supposed to be an opportunity for further comments on the final report itself.
That's correct, yes.
For the constituencies, and that was the purpose of the resolution.
Yes.
Secondly, we left the final report itself open to the public at large, and that was the purpose of opening the list on the 9th of January. Right?
Yes.
Then, secondly, I believe we had the process which will incorporate the implementation report into the final set of recommendations, as well as an agreement that we would present issues report. The final report with recommendations is what we would put forward to the board, and it is a relatively narrow set of actual policy changes with a fair number of requests to staff for staff support.
Yes, one of the issues, and while we've got Louis on the call, and I'll do offline, but they're in the Who Is recommendations. Most of the recommendations are actually focused on things ICANN staff need to do. And one thing I think that's important is for the ICANN staff to report on whether they are all feasible. There are actually only four recommendations that relate to registrars, three in the area of accuracy and one in the area of bulk Who Is. So it's a fairly constrained set of recommendations that affect registries and registrars.
And certainly, Bruce, thank you for mentioning that. We will be giving some kind of views perhaps next week on the parts that are not really policy recommendations. They're recommendations for new policy, I should say, but matters concerning enforcement and the like. But going back to the point being discussed just by you and Marilyn before this, let me just sort of state what I understood you to say, Bruce, which I think is very constructive, and that is that the process going forward is the implementation assessment group will put together its report, which may indeed include some suggestions for changes that might ease the burden of implementation, that the constituency and other comments have been received, and that all of that is envisioned to be remanded to the Who Is task force for amendment of their report and resubmission to the Names Council.
That's the my perspective as co-chair. That's where we stand. I just want to make one comment that we need to come back to, Bruce, reminding people that besides the fact that they will be asked to vote on the policy recommendations, there will be issue reports to be discussed as well. Those are on a separate track. They are issues reports for the Names Council to consider further work.
Yeah, and that's not that's quite right. And that's independent of this final report that goes to the board.
Exactly.
Yep. And because the issues report is something that would be for internal GNSO use, and we would then vote on that issues report to decide whether we wanted to create policy in the area that the issues report identifies. Just so I understand the timing, Marilyn, do you see an issues report being available for the next meeting or not?
We intend to have issues reports on four areas. We had our call yesterday, and one of them will be really more a documentation of a set of questions. And the other three will be, there'll be an issues report on searchability, an issues report on consistency of data elements, a consistency and uniformity of data elements, an issues report on the work that we had identified that needed to be undertaken, and an example of that would be the need to come to agreement on what the, whether it's 15 days or it's 30 days or it's 90 seconds. that was a joke, that the registrant is given once inaccurate data is identified.
Yeah, but what I suggest just in terms of timing is I doubt that we will have time, given the agenda for the next call in February would have quite a lot of detailed discussion on the who is recommendations and transfers recommendations, that we might delay discussion of those issues reports until the March meeting. Would that make sense?
That would make sense to us, and we would welcome that.
Following up on your the other aspect of your comment just now, Bruce, is it fair to say that the goal is in the February meeting to conclude final reports and recommendations on both transfers and who is?
That's correct, yes. That is the intent, and of course I can't promise anything because, of course, it's subject to vote of the council.
Right.
And that would prepare us, timing-wise, as we discussed before, for there would have to be a short turnaround, right, Louis? So that, because you need how many days to go to the board?
Well, if we're trying to put this on the calendar for discussion in Rio de Janeiro on the 23rd to 27th of March, it would be about 28 days before that, the nominal time where really the very last final report is received. For the 23rd. Now, when is your February meeting?
It's before that, but only just. I can't remember the exact day. But
I believe it's the 20th. Glenn can verify that?
Yes, it's the 20th.
Well, we'll just have to work and see if we can meet that time frame, if that's all we can do. Okay, have we finished on that item?
Bruce, let me ask Tony to verify this, but I believe if there's any constituency that is going to get another set of comments in, you know, actually, even though today was what we had agreed to, it's our intent to try to incorporate comments to the extent we can. So if somebody's still going to get comments in and hasn't as a constituency, if they could let us know, we still have the ability to incorporate those, but they would have to come in soon.
But can I just confirm, it's Laurence, that we have not received comments from the constituencies themselves? No formal comments. In this last period for comments?
No.
Yeah, I don't think you'll get any from registrars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as I recall, in the Amsterdam meeting, the non-commercials had said that they would need more time. I don't know whether Chun can confirm whether there's likely to be comments from the non-commercial as a constituency as a whole.
In my constituency, one or two persons have been concerned on who is the report. They raised up some questions. Then I requested them to make one formal document as an input to who is the task force, but still it is not completed. So maybe I guess most of the distance in this process will be like me. I am, other members are also deeply frustrated because many points were repeatedly pointed out in many occasions, including our regular meeting and also somewhere else. Nevertheless, some points were not so appropriately emphasized and underlined in the final report. So that's one of the reasons that we could put up more effectively. And the other frustration reason is that repeatedly, we non-commercial users' constituencies' recommendation and arguments were not effectively reflected in our documents. So many people don't make a comment more. That's another problem that our mailing list has only a few comments. So anyway, we are trying to make some comment if it is possible. So I think such an open attitude of that task force members is really good. We will try to make some comments if possible, if it is available.
Yeah, I think I'll just sort of make a general comment, Chan, and that is that if what I think is correct...
Yeah, I see. It should be very general. We cannot deal with the other most difficult. Okay, I understand that.
Yeah, one comment I would make is that many of the concerns that I've seen raised, I think, within your constituency relate to privacy issues, and my suggestion is that you formulate those privacy issues into a privacy issues report, and that we actually deal with privacy as a topic on its own. That would just be my suggestion.
Excuse me, Bruce. This is
is in fact what we plan to do, and the member of the non-commercial constituency is helping to pull together identification of the questions on privacy. So perhaps that will fulfill beginning identification that Chun has raised.
Okay, and then Roger was just there.
Yeah, I simply wanted to say I'm signing off for a short while. I'll rejoin the call probably in about a half hour.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I think we've covered this topic then. Is there any other issues that anyone wants to raise? Okay, we then move on to the Delete Task Force. Hopefully a fairly quick update from Jordan, really more so on process. I know Jordan's posted some of the initial recommendations that are being considered to the council list, so you all should have a look at those. But I think at this point it's really just an explanation of where your process is, when a formal document will be available for public comment and so forth, Jordan.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me run through a few comments without getting into the details of the draft recommendations that I posted to the list last night. If anyone has any questions about those, they can either ask them briefly here or contact me offline, and I'll be glad to talk through them. At a high level, I'd just like to say that I think that, as you all know, the Delete Task Force was chartered under the new GNSO policy development process, and so far we've had a difficult time following those guidelines. To a certain extent, that's true, I think, because we don't have the staff support that's imagined within the GNSO PDP, and as a result, it's simply been impossible to work within the time constraints because we're relying on the volunteer efforts of the various constituency appointees to the task force. To a certain extent, though, I think there are problems that extend beyond just the lack of staff support. Just as an example of that, from the very first meeting that we ever had, we were behind schedule already because it had taken longer significantly longer than anticipated, simply to get the names of members for the task force from each of the constituencies. And that's the sort of problem that it's unlikely that staff support in and of itself is going to correct. So this is just something I think we're noting and making comment of for as we anticipate the future under the GNSO PDP, is that it's going to require a lot more effort on behalf of the various constituencies and paying very close attention to timelines and making sure that the members that are appointed to the various task forces are capable of putting in the time and effort required to meet the deadline. So having said that, we're obviously considerably behind schedule as we were supposed to be done by now, but I think we've made extremely good progress. As all of you saw last night, I posted a set of draft recommendations that the task force has by and large agreed upon. There's some minor tweaking, especially in regards to the UDRP deletion under issue number one, that we're tweaking, but those are really minor issues of trying to get the phrasing correct and get rid of a few of the like eight rules that we have there, so it's more like three or four and is easier to understand because there's been a lot of confusion over exactly what that means. But we've made very good progress, and our goal is now to basically wrap those recommendations up into a report that will include a lot more explanatory text and essentially give some rationale how we came to those conclusions, as well as bringing in some of the text from the issues paper to give a sense of what we're trying to solve in the first place. So that leaves us with two next steps, essentially. First is that there are two outstanding issues that we are trying to resolve as a task force. The first is whether registrars should be required not to delete names for some portion of the renewal grace period. Right now, there's a recommendation indicating that they must delete the name by the end of the renewal grace period. So basically, this is to prevent registrars from holding on to names and reselling them themselves or something along those lines, or potentially just making it hard for members of the internet community to know when a name's going to be deleted, because it just registrars don't delete it and eventually, you know, may drop it, but it's unclear when. There's going to be essentially a hard deadline at the end of the renewal grace period, which is 45 days currently after the expiration of the domain name. And so the issue is whether there should also be a minimum time period through the renewal grace period that the name should be carried. There's some discussion there, and that's one issue that we need to resolve. The other issue is the issue of reallocation, which is raised in issue number 3, whether there should be some standardized process. And I think there's some general consensus within the group that it would be nice to have some standardization in terms of reallocation. Unfortunately, there's very little direction in terms of what exactly would be desirable in terms of reallocation. So there's a sense it would be nice to have, but with no specifics in terms of what exactly that would involve. Most likely, as a result, what we're going to end up with in order to avoid delaying all of the work is publishing a report and recommendations that do not include any specific recommendations on reallocation, and we'll request that probably the Names Council recharter the deleted task force after the acceptance of the initial set of recommendations in order to solely look into the issue of reallocation. We think it's a thorny one. It needs a lot of work and is something that is basically not going to be solvable, most likely, under the amount of time that we have currently. So,
Jordan, this is Bruce Tonkin. I'd certainly endorse that as a process, because what we've learned certainly in Who Is I think it's better to focus on a couple of well thought through recommendations and you know, get comments on implementation and so on, and then move on to the next one rather than delaying the entire process to get everything solved.
Right, yes, exactly. And I think one good thing that we face here is that there's very little interdependency between the issue of reallocation and the general issue of delete. So I think that they're two actually relatively discrete problem spaces, and it's not going to significantly alter the one set of recommendations when we come out with the second set. So
yeah, because essentially what you're saying is you sounds like you're getting reasonable, well, converging on consensus on one point, and on the other point, consensus is still some way off. So.
Well, it's not a matter of consensus some way off as much as no one even knows what they want, so it's impossible. I mean, there's pretty good consensus that it would be nice to have a consistent reallocation policy, but then you ask the question, what would that policy look like? And it's not that people have different ideas so much as people don't have any ideas. So there's actually a lot of thought that needs to be done there, just in terms of figuring out what the possibilities are. And I think ultimately it would be good to see some real world evidence of how reallocation policies work before we try to figure out what an ideal solution would look like. But in any case, I think that's an issue that is likely is going to get kicked back to the Name Council for some reconsideration.
Okay, and when do you think your draft report will be available for public?
So our goal is to have a draft report in the imminent future. We have a call next week, and I'm hoping that we can resolve the outstanding issues at that point and get approval on the text that we've got so far in the draft report. So my hope would be within about 10 days from now, we will have a draft report that will be publishable for public comment, and then after a reasonable public comment period, we'll be able to get a final report out for the Names Council to review and vote upon.
Okay. Yeah. So most likely that will get picked up in the March meeting of the GNSO.
Yeah, I would guess that would be the case.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions for Jordan?
No, it seems you're very efficient, Jordan.
Thank you, Laura. Fortunately,
congratulations.
We've had a really good group of people on the task force who've been willing to have some really good discussions and help us move
uh-huh.
towards consensus quite rapidly.
Okay. Now, I gather I don't have J. Scott Evans, is that right? Okay, we'll move, as Ken suggested, that further down the agenda. I don't have Roger for the GNSO budget. The next item is the process for new TLDs, and really I think there's two issues in that. Is one, should there be a structure, and two, how should you structure the top-level namespace? And for us at this in this call, I think it's really agreeing on a process, and then I can report back to to Stuart Lynn of the ICANN president to inform him of when he'll get a result. My suggestion of a process is that we deal with this at a names council level initially, and that being via a getting each constituency to actually make a formal statement on this topic, and then we see if there is any consistent position from those constituencies. Otherwise, I think we're more likely to basically just provide a report back to ICANN saying here are the different constituency positions. Would anyone like to just sort of comment or suggest what they would see a process for considering that question? The question is, should we structure the evolution of the generic top-level namespace, and if so, how to do so?
Bruce, it's Meryl, and I have a question of clarification. Is Louis still on the call?
Yes, I am.
Okay. As I understand, and maybe we could just make sure that we have a brief clarification of the instruction from the board based on the resolution. The president put forward a recommendation to the board that this question, these questions, be referred to the Names Council.
To the GNSO Council, yes.
The GNSO Council.
Old habits die hard.
Should we call this the GNSO Policy Council, or are we just the GNSO Council?
Just GNSO Council.
The GNSO Council.
Sorry, you two spoke over each other.
The bylaws call you the GNSO Council.
Oh, got it. Thanks. So is there anything else in the instruction from the board, the resolution from the board, that we need to be apprised of? That would just be my question for clarification before I respond to Bruce's question.
Okay. The resolution, which is 02.151, adopted in Amsterdam, says that the board requests the GNSO to provide a recommendation by such time as shall be mutually agreed by the president and chair of the GNSO Council on whether to structure the evolution of the generic top-level namespace, and if so, how to do so. I believe that Stuart Lynn has consulted with Bruce Tonkin, and I wasn't party to those consultations, so Bruce can probably report on that.
I think all I referred Stuart to was that it's an agenda item on this meeting, and at the end of this meeting I would inform Stuart of the process.
Okay. Then I would just suggest that I think that it's very important, and the idea that that the council would manage this process. I think it is a really critical process for all of the members of the existing constituencies, but it will also be an issue of significant concern to the at-large. And in the future, we will have representatives of the at-large on the council, but given the timing, we don't have them now. So my question is whether we should be thinking about asking the at-large to provide a designated representative or even to perhaps blow up someone like the previous chair or vice chair of the GA to make sure that there's some kind of representation.
Okay, before we address the representation issue, which is fine, the question I would say is, do you believe we need to form a task force to look at this, or do you believe we could do it at the Names Council level and leave aside adding more people to that process?
Okay, and I'm sorry, I wasn't clearer. I suggest that we manage it at the council level.
Okay, if I could just get some more feedback on that topic, and then we'll come back to the issue of representation. Would anyone else like to comment or... On that particular question, whether we deal with it by forming a separate task force or whether we deal with it at the council level.
Carrie, please.
Yes, go ahead, Carrie.
I have no clear notion about which the best way to proceed might be, but I do think it's of absolutely crucial importance that we go clearly on record as having a stance on this. That we can't let it just slide by. So if we decide to deal with it at the council level, then I think we need to set some dedicated time to that very test. It can't just be an agenda item among many others on an occasional call.
Yeah, so I think what you're suggesting, Carrie, is probably something similar to what we did with the evolution and reform process, where we actually had some dedicated teleconferences to that particular topic.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, any other comments?
Philippe, I think I certainly endorse keeping it at council level, and I endorse also the emphasis that Carrie was saying to give to this. This is very much our essence.
Okay. Well, what I would suggest then, I think it's appropriate that we form what I'd call a committee of the whole. In other words, it's a committee of the whole council to look at that topic. I would rather not chair that committee, given my other commitments at this time. So I would prefer that we schedule a GNSO council committee, if you like, to talk about that topic. But I would suggest that someone else volunteer to chair that particular discussion. Do I have any offers or comments on that?
Could I nominate the past chair?
Yeah, I would second that.
Would you accept that nomination, Philip?
Yes, I would. I thought all this was behind me.
Sort of think that it's a better allocation of time because that's someone that's focused on that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I appreciate you are sharing some other special things as well at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, so what I suggest we do in this call is resolve that the committee of the whole Names Council will address this issue. That committee will be chaired by Philip. Now, the next issue is one of timing. Would we be seeking to get a report to the ICANN board by March for the March meeting, or what's a reasonable time frame?
And I guess are the board looking to make decisions in March, or
Well, no, I think that it's just purely for us to come back to them and say when.
Right, how feasible it is.
The resolution of the ICANN board really just says that Stuart and the chair of the council will agree on a time frame. So.
I mean, to some extent, it depends how far.
This is Louis concerning the timing point. I'm of course speculating a little bit, but perhaps it's more somewhat informed speculation. I doubt that March is a relevant time period for this particular item. So if it lasts longer, that's okay.
Okay,
yeah,
that's,
I think
okay,
that would definitely relieve the
concern.
Pressure on this number of things we're trying to do at once here, yeah. Well, you tell me, Philip, suggest a time frame. What do you think is reasonable?
Well, we can again, as with many things, work towards a preliminary report and others. The critical timeline is going to be, to some extent, constituencies themselves coming to an opinion. It may be interesting just to have a quick round of constituencies on this call to see how close each of those is. As you may know, the BC is in a healthy position in that we already have a position on that, but I don't suspect that's the case for everybody.
Yeah, I think it would be quite controversial within registrars. I imagine there'd be a number of differing opinions, and it would probably take some time to really get some input together.
Okay. And how about other?
I would say that we're probably talking what are we talking about, March, April, you might be talking about an April, May time frame.
Mm-hmm. Can I just raise another question? Maybe a good idea, Bruce, would be if we could get Glenn to together for all of us sort of a timeline of all the various things we have going on, and the date would be helpful for all of us, sort of a calendar.
Yes. Well, I think that's right. And I mean, I've been attempting to do that in the. You'll notice in each agenda, I try and identify what the topics are for the following meetings. So I try to think a few meetings ahead so that I've got a bit of a plan. But you're quite right; that is useful.
Just to add to that, Marilyn, Bruce, on the calendar for this year, I have put in some of the meetings so far, and after the task force, the Who Is task force yesterday, I will add the other dates. It's on the calendar page.
Okay. Well, what I suggest, I think we're probably not going to be able to get through the detail in this call. What I would suggest, Philip, if you can have a go at creating a time frame for those meetings, you know, schedule some meetings, work out, you need time to get constituency input, you probably then need to have some calls to discuss that constituency input and so forth. And if you can provide that to me perhaps in the next week, then I will get back to Stuart with that time frame.
Okay, sounds good.
Bruce, Grant Forsyth here.
Yes.
I just have one suggestion, and that is that we have the objective of having either a draft report or at least have collected the various constituencies' input to such a draft report prior to Rio. I think that should be an objective for Rio. And I think if you back up to that suggestion, then I think there should be a decision at this meeting as to when constituencies would lodge their views on this matter for the whole of council meeting.
And what would you like to suggest there, Grant?
Well, if we're looking at end of March, I would say that we should perhaps give the constituencies a month to file an initial paper or thoughts or issues or however the constituency wishes to approach the subject. I would say if we gave them 4 weeks to do that.
Okay, I think that's reasonable. So we would agree in this call that the constituency input is required by the time of the next council meeting, effectively.
Bruce, would you do me a favor? Would
yep.
you, I'm having a little problem here. Could you restate exactly what you and Grant were just discussing there? There's a lot of interference on the line. I'd like to make sure that I understand exactly what we're saying here.
Okay. What Grant is saying is that as input into a discussion by the committee, we require some position statements from the constituencies, and Grant is suggesting that we provide a 4-week period starting today for constituencies to provide a position statement.
Bruce, can I get in the queue to comment on that time frame?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think 4 weeks from today is probably not appropriate. I would make it 4 weeks from Monday, give the constituencies a chance for adequate notification of this.
That's fine. Marilyn, your comment?
Let me suggest that we think very hard about whether 4 weeks is actually going to work for the constituencies, given that they have transfers, and I just need to hear from the constituencies about the feasibility of 4 weeks. I support, Ken, your other statement. I guess the real question is, do we need it by, are we going to have time to address it at all in February, or do we need it by March?
I must say, I think from a registrar's point of view, Who Is and Transfers is likely to occupy most of the thought of the senior people that are likely to even comment on this for the foreseeable month.
Bruce, this is Louis. May I have the floor?
Yes, go for it.
In terms of timing, this particular task, this bit of advice on structure of the namespace, is not in the critical path with respect to the board moving forward on the limited number of sponsored TLDs described in in the resolution in Amsterdam. It is, however, in the critical path of the longer-term plans for possible new GTLDs. I do believe that the board members, at least, consider very careful and thoughtful advice on this to be very important, and many of them consider this to be one of the most important questions that ICANN must deal with in the next year. So they are looking for a high-quality input from the GNSO, not that there would ever be anything else.
Yeah, so basically you're saying it shouldn't be rushed. We should allow time for people to really think the issue through.
And I would second that. Maybe the time frame is give people time to notice and maybe this is something that Philip could consider and come back to you on. If the plan, it is feasible to lay out the plan by March and to have identified inputs from the constituencies, that would mean that possibly they could have 6 weeks to get their comments.
I think it's more fair as well to provide 6 weeks. 4 weeks seems to me very short in light of what all of the things we have to see now as well.
This is Ellen. I agree.
Bruce, that's fine. I've heard the conversation and the timelines. I'll come back with a schedule that factors that in.
Okay. What I'd like to do then is just get a formal resolution at this point that the resolution is that a committee of the Names Council will be formed to address the question that Stuart has asked on the generic top-level namespace, and that this committee will be chaired by Philip Shepherd, and that Philip will prepare a timeline to respond to the question from Stuart Lynn. Can I have a seconder for that as a motion?
Ellen, I second it.
Okay. All those in favour say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, I'll leave that as a pass. Now, the issue of representation, I just want to come back to that. I think Marilyn does raise a good point. And I guess I'm fairly open to how you want to handle that. God, I'm not close enough to the structure we have with at large now. Is there an entity that we can request a representative from, or how's that work, Marilyn? You might know more about it.
Bruce, this is Louis. May I speak to this?
Sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry to keep intervening here. I think there is, in all likelihood, there will be a interim at-large advisory committee operating by the 1st of February. In all likelihood, it will view one of its very earliest tasks to appoint its GNSO liaison. And in my view, legally, it would be inappropriate under the bylaws for the GNSO to adopt some other arrangement for at-large representation.
Okay. So what you're saying, just so I can clarify that, in the bylaws at the moment, the at-large can appoint a liaison to the council itself, and you're saying that will be done by 1st of February. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying, not quite. What I'm saying is the Interim At-Large Advisory Committee will be in operation by the 1st of February. They will, in all likelihood, take it as one of their very first actions, so it's probably not going to be February 1st, but it'll be a week after or something.
Bruce, can I make a comment on that? I'd like to modify my earlier recommendation to take this into account. My suggestion actually was going to be that the communication be undertaken with Denise Michelle as the staff to the group to figure out when they could provide the support, and it sounds like Louis got a better sense of the timeline on it. Perhaps in the interim, Louis, Denise could be, if Philip sets a mailing list up or something, there could be informal communication, so there's feedback going on into the group as they get formed. But
absolutely. May I suggest that as an interim measure, you simply put Denise on the mailing list, and she can see that it gets done as soon as possible.
Okay, who's Denise, sorry?
Denise Michelle. She's the coordinator for the At-Large Advisory Committee.
Okay.
No, that sounds fine. That means we can invite them to send a representative once they have one, and we can keep them advised in the meantime of progress.
Okay. So, Philip, you will liaise with Denise on that?
Yeah, I will.
Okay. All right, I think we've got that issue addressed. I don't think we need to formally vote on that.
And Bruce, just to be a little more explanatory, the liaison they appoint will be a liaison generally to the GNSO Council, and of course, since you're forming a committee of the whole, they would be a liaison on that council.
Yes, understood. And I hopefully we can reflect that in the minutes, Glenn, when we get around to writing the minutes up in this meeting. But that's an important point that Louis just made. Okay. I guess the next big topic is the appointment of representatives to the ICANN board itself. And we have, there are two seats which are designated numbers. It's seats 13 and 14 on the new board. I've had some correspondence with Louis on this, and I can let Louis comment further, but my understanding is that it's certainly the desire of the ICANN board, if it's at all possible, to have a new board in place by the meeting in Rio. And so from our point of view, I guess we should be looking at a timeline for selecting the representatives for seats 13 and 14 so that they could potentially take up their seat by March. And that will be dependent on whether the other seats are filled at the time. Do you want to comment on that just briefly, Louis?
Yes, I will, and I apologize to you, Bruce, because our correspondence was a while ago, and you correctly stated what the board's desire would be. On the other hand, a bit of reality has injected itself in the tyranny of the calendar. The bylaws provide that the new board will take its seats at the first regular meeting, meaning a quarterly or three times a year type meeting, that occurs more than 7 days after 10 of the directors have been selected under the new process. That essentially will require the eight directors selected by the nominating committee plus at least two of the directors selected by either the ASO or the GNSO. Currently, the nominating committee chair is a topic for discussion at a board meeting to be held on this coming Monday. And at that point, nominating committee members will start being populated, but one can construct a calendar to say that the nominating committee can't reasonably be expected to get operating until early February, and chance that it could actually complete its work by the 20th of March is infinitesimal, I would say.
Yes, that's correct, yes. I can report
so the deadline is probably somewhat relaxed from what we talked earlier.
Thank you. Thank you, Louis. That's a good clarification.
Louis, this is Ellen. If I just may get, now that you've drawn out all the timeline, what's the most realistic first meeting that this is going to have to happen by?
Well, the realistic thing would then be the Montreal meeting in late June, which means directors should be seated 7 days before that, which probably, to make them most effective for the GNSO, you might even want to think about at an earlier time than that so they can begin familiarizing themselves with the board's work.
Louis Philippe here. The terms of office for these first two appointments, I understand, are not the terms of office for these first two appointments from the GNSO, I understand, have a fixed time. Is that correct?
Yes.
So the later we leave...
No, I'm sorry. I fixed... We weren't communicating. I didn't understand. No, they have. It has a definite termination date.
Yes, termination date, exactly.
All right.
So the time our directors will serve is therefore shorter the longer the time of the new board coming into existence is that correct?
I don't understand that.
Okay, if my calculation earlier was that our shortest serving director under the transition rules, if they sat in March, would have a term of office of about 12 months.
until that particular seat came up for re-election.
Yeah, give me just a moment. We have, for the GNSO, as pointed out by Bruce, seats 13 and 14. Seats 13 and 14, the initial transition appointments last until those things ordinarily begin. The first seat 13 in its first regular term begins in the second quarter of 2004, and seat 14 begins in the second quarter of 2005. Did that clarify your question?
Right. So, but that's a second term, yes?
Yes, the first full term. The first interim term starts on a definite date that is triggered, that occurs at a regular meeting that occurs 7 days after 10 directors have been appointed.
Right. So the first director, so seat 13, which is the shortest term, will be serving until, say, March 2004.
So it could be 9 months, I guess. Is that right?
Yes. So in fact, the term of office could be quite short.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, just wanted to be clear. That was my understanding of the rules, yeah.
This is Ellen. Glenn, maybe because it's just too late in Israel now, did you take all those notes so that we can see what that looks like in writing, please?
Well, and I should say, Ellen, that as I think I sent a note around to the council list, in the next several days we'll be preparing an explanation and even a chart.
Wonderful, thank you. Charts are good.
Yeah, an easy to read chart.
That's right. Color, you know, and the color coded ones are even better.
This is Ken Stubbs. Can I ask Louis for clarification on one item,
go ahead,
please?
Ken.
Yeah, Louis, I'm somewhat confused about one issue, and that is with the reformed ICANN. Are there term limits on existing directors? In other words, could a director be appointed or nominated for 9 months and then rerun if they've served more than one term previously, or what's the status on that?
I would need to check to be absolutely sure, but I think the answer is yes, they could serve longer. Okay, yes. Well...
I don't need an answer.
Article 6, Section 8, Paragraph 5 says no director may serve more than 3 consecutive terms.
And does that include terms of the past?
Well, I'd have to look at that.
Right, because
that's the obvious question.
Yes.
Louis, Grant Forsythe, will you provide your view as to that question of repeated terms in the clarifying paper you're going to give us?
Yes, I will.
Thanks.
And it's Marilyn. Ken, is it possible to include the number of terms existing board members have held?
It certainly is.
Okay, one of the issues that, and I think, you know, given that we've got a little bit more slack in the time, we probably don't have to decide an exact process today, but at least have a bit of discussion about a process. There are probably two options here. One is that we could have a completely open process where anybody can be nominated, and we can perhaps select, you know, the one with the most votes gets, say, seat 14, and the person with the second most votes gets seat 13. That's one approach. Another approach is to separate the roles of seat 13 and 14 and say one of those seats we might decide to bias towards an existing board member for continuity. So we might say that amongst the three DNSO elected board members, which is Amadeo, Alessandro and Jonathan Cohen, we might say, okay, well, we will allocate a seat, might be seat 13, for one of those three directors, and we could have an election at that level, and then have a more open election for seat 14. So those are just some ideas I had, but I really just open it for discussion on some different ways that we might like to handle the process.
Bruce, it's Grant from Scythia. Question, does anyone have any idea as to the wishes with regards continued board involvement by any of those three current members?
I have personally communicated with two of those seated board members, and both of those have indicated that if they were asked, you know, they would serve again. So in other words, if they had the support of the community, they would serve again. I don't think at this stage it's appropriate for me to put pressure on them, but that I have at least found that much out, yes.
Bruce, who are you unable to communicate with?
I'd rather not say, because I think if I'm going to do that, I think they should be able to comment publicly to the council list. But let me just say that I've spoken to two of the directors. I've sent emails to all three, and I've had a reply from two, I guess, the process I've used so far. And the two that have replied have said that, you know, if they had the support of the community, or the community desired it, they would be prepared to be available for another term.
So I understand, this is Ellen, that I think for purposes of your question on how we should structure it, we should assume that the sitting board people would like to stay on.
Can I get in the queue to ask a question too, Bruce?
Yeah, go ahead, Marilyn.
My question is to Louie about the nominating committee process. Would it be a fair assumption that a previous board member, a past board member, who may have been on the previous board or could be on the board now but whose term is lapsing, could be nominated through the nominating committee process? Is there anything that precludes that?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That's entirely appropriate.
I'm sorry, Marilyn, could you please repeat your question?
My question was, could past or sitting board members, could past board members, meaning they're already off, or sitting board members whose terms are lapsing, could they be nominated through the nominating committee process?
Assuming that they'd been elected by our supporting organization previously. Is that what you're saying, Marilyn?
Well, they could or could not have been. A past board member might have been one of the early board members. I'll pick on one just because he's not here. But, you know, let's say that someone that has already rotated off the board, such as Bill Davidson, he was FO, but someone who was on the original board and is now off the board, were interested in being nominated. They met the other qualifications that the nominating committee is looking for. Could they be nominated to the board through that process? Right, because there's two kinds of board. There are both board members who came to the board through the SOs, nine, and then there were a number of board members who were appointed.
And what you're saying,
there were some selected in the 2000 election.
Right,
yeah.
Right, exactly. And then there were five that were elected at large.
And what you're saying, Marilyn, of course, is that a past board member with a past record of good performance on the board would obviously help in terms of the nominating committee knowing whether or not that person was suitable for the board.
Exactly.
Yeah. And certainly, I think certainly what Marilyn is saying is that one of the existing members, like let's say we had if we're talking about the three DNSO members, it is potentially possible that one or more of those three DNSO members could be nominated in the nominating committee process and could be selected independently of any selection process that we have. If that is the case, then the question then comes down to timing. Do we have an election process first, or do we wait until the nominating committee has selected their eight directors and then make a decision when we see the lay of the land, I guess. It's another approach we could take.
I think the trouble with that is we then put our timetable in the laps of others, and it may be a long timetable, huh?
I would make a different point, if I could respond on that.
Yep.
The purpose of the nominating committee and the board's intent there, and Louie can correct me on this, but at the time of the nominating committee, I spent a lot of time trying to talk to board members about what their purpose was. I believe the goal is that it would be the non-usual suspects who would not come to the board through the SOs. So, but a past board member, I think, would fit that, or one whose seat is expiring. But I think largely the intent of the Evolution and Reform Committee was to try to find people who are not presently actively working in the existing SO structure.
Yes, I guess you're trying to achieve diversity. That's
yes.
Probably correct. If the nominating committee ends up selecting the same people that we would anyway, then you would say, why is there a nominating committee? So I think that is a fair point. I think Philip's point's well made as well, in that I don't think we can afford to wait. We should actually put in a process ourselves and work to that process.
I have a question now.
Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I stepped away from the phone. Maybe this was discussed. But how does the question of successive terms on the board come into play with the new board? Are we putting the clock back to zero, or
does
that still count?
A question was asked, Tony, and an answer is not yet forthcoming. Louis will respond to that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to get a chart.
We're going to get an answer, yes, in the chart. So coming back to the initial comments that I raised, what's the feeling in given that we have two seats? They have different interim terms. Seat 13 has a shorter interim term than seat 14. And is there a perception that we should deliberately seek to get continuity of at least one of our DNSO members, or should we just have the whole process being open?
Frankly, Bruce, I'd say that question really deserves the opportunity for a little consultation with our constituencies rather than just taking it off the top of our head. It would be better if we tried to take that offline and did it on an email exchange. We should be able to manage a discussion like that on the council, I would think.
Okay, any other feedback?
That's just my opinion, yep. Just one out of 18. So.
Yes, that's right. Thank you, Ken. Yep. Any other feedback?
The other side of the coin, Bruce,
yep.
Is that if we bias one seat or whatever to previous people that we've elected or that the names council elected, does that preclude them from nomination under seat 14, say? It leads to some complications, perhaps.
Yeah, and I guess another approach that you can take is you hold an election for one seat completely with certain rules, and then you hold an election for the next seat, potentially on a different set of rules. And again, it's starting to get fairly complex. And I think my feeling at this stage is that probably the simplest process would be it's an open election for anyone that wishes to nominate for the two seats. And we give the longer term seat, which is seat 14, to the person that holds the most votes, and we give seat 13 to the next person. The other issue that we probably need to consider here also is one of geographic diversity as well, and whether we would want to have each of those seats, and there may be a requirement anyway, but in a different region.
I think that's something, it's Marilyn, that we need to stay really committed to. That was one of the reasons that we had lobbied very hard to maintain three seats to have broader geographic diversity, and I think from our constituency perspective, and I think others spoke on that issue at the time, we all consider that very important.
Yeah, so at the moment we have three DNSO elected members that are from three distinct geographic regions. So I guess what we're saying is that we would at least seek that the two seats be from different regions. Is that a sense that I'm getting?
Yes.
I don't think we've got a choice, if I recall the bylaws correctly. Am I right, Louis?
I think you are, but I'm looking that up right now myself.
Yeah.
But then in that case, if you're looking, even let's say as an example of Alejandro or Jonathan, if you wanted to dedicate that seat, then that may or may not meet the diversity?
Yes, it does start to get fairly complex. So I think if we work at what our higher order things are, one, we need to have geographic diversity. I guess we could probably use, what about the issue of whether we just allocate the seat 14 to the person with the most votes and seat 13 to the next person? Is that
that makes sense, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, let me intervene here. Yes, indeed, Philip is correct. Article 6, Section 2, Paragraph 3 requires that no two directors selected by a supporting organization shall be citizens of the same country or of countries located in the same geographic region. That consideration is conceivably could make your voting mechanism inappropriate.
Well, what you just suggested there, Bruce, is if you had the first, you know, seat 14, whatever, gets the most votes, and the next one would get the second most votes, but for if they turn out to be from the same geographic region?
I think you're better off having two separate elections. We're starting to get really convoluted here.
It doesn't help having two separate elections, is it? You're going to have to...
Sure it does, because on the qualifications for the second election would automatically exempt that director from being from the same zone as the previous director that was just elected.
Because what I think what Ken's saying is it can affect the way people vote. Because,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you, in a way, you might have... If someone else... if you, let's say, you have one person from Europe... and you give your vote to someone else in Europe, and it turns out that you know, the first person is selected, then I think you might want to have the opportunity to then have a look at the other candidates and say, you know, who's the
guys. We've done this before, as I recall.
You probably have, Marilyn. Please go ahead.
I believe the way we did it was we eliminated all candidates from the same region on the second round.
That's why I proposed two separate ballot, Marilyn, after 3 years of dealing with it.
Right.
Yeah, so there is two ballots.
Yeah. It's two rounds, but it's not two different nomination processes.
Okay, that's sensible, yes.
So Bruce, I think the way you would apply the prior practice to this situation would be presumably you would first you would nominate everybody who wanted to be a director, and then you would have a process by which you voted on seat number 14, the longer-term seat.
Yep.
And then once that comes to a conclusion, then you continue selections with respect to seat 13.
That's exactly what we did when we populated the board the first time.
Okay. What I suggest we do then at this point in time, and just to pick up on Ken's comment, what I suggest I do is post this process to the council list, and we probably can then vote on it in February to accept the process. This at least allows people time to consult a bit more widely on it rather than try and actually decide it at this meeting. Given that the timing would probably fit then, we can vote on the process in February and start the process at that time.
Now, just the other question, perhaps, is who nominates? In the past, we've actually we had a thing called the General Assembly, and nominations technically came via that body. Presumably, nominations have to come from one council member, but obviously they can be contacted by the rest of the world. Would that be the case?
Again, I guess there's rules of procedure too that I suppose that I could look up in the current Names Council rules of procedure from the previous council. But and I don't know whether there's a process in there. But so you're basically suggesting that a person must be nominated by a sitting GNSO council member?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what practically we have in terms of people or organizations who will do the nominating, whereas before we had a defined thing called a General Assembly member.
Right. The process for nomination for these seats is clearly intended to be different for the very reason that Philip just pointed out, different than prior practice.
I'm still not clear there. Louis, are you saying that...
In the prior bylaws, the General Assembly had a role in the nomination process. There's no General Assembly. They're not obviously not intended to have a role in the nomination process.
Okay. This also for a point of clarification, Louis, a liaison presumably can't actually nominate someone then either. Is that correct? So we could have, if we take the thing that you talked about, there's an interim at-large advisory committee. They may appoint a liaison to the GNSO council. Would that liaison be nominating somebody or voting?
The liaison would not be voting.
Okay.
I'm I will try to address the question of nominations and any restrictions in the bylaws or procedures in the bylaws respecting nominations in the paper that I prepare.
Okay. So again, I think because the... Sorry, go ahead.
Wait a minute. I have a question here. I'm fully, besides liaison, aren't we expecting to get representatives... The timing is our problem, right? We're expecting to get representatives through the nominating committee to the council from the at-large.
That's correct, and they are voting members, I believe.
Right, but timing is our problem there, right?
Yes.
That's correct.
Okay.
The nominating committee, when it commences operations in the next couple of weeks, will have a lot of things to fill, including both board seats and also three members, as I recall, on the GNSO council.
Right. I just wanted to re-clarify that our problem on participation as voting members might end up being timing for them.
And again, that, I guess, becomes a potentially sensitive issue, and this comes back to my first question in a way, but if we delay our process until those members are selected, then again, we're starting to become dependent on a number of other processes happening in serial, which I think could cause problems.
Yeah.
So I think we would just set a timeline that meets our needs, and if those members are selected within that time frame, that's fine.
If you're intending to act at the in terms of process and schedule at the February meeting, it might be appropriate, Bruce, for you as chair of the GNSO Council to consult with the chair of the nominating committee, who should be in place before then.
With chair of nominating, okay.
Excuse me, Bruce, this is Roger Cocchetti. I rejoined.
Thank you, Roger. Okay, well, what I will attempt to do is draft the sense of the process I've received so far. I will get Louis's comments on that, and I'll post that to the council list for comment, and we'll vote on that process in the February GNSO council meeting. Does that meet with any objections to that?
Sounds good.
Okay. Now, who have we got back? We've got Roger back. Do we have J. Scott Evans at all?
If we could take up the budget stuff now, Bruce, that would be great for me because I do have to cut off again.
Okay. I think we're going to be doing that anyway.
Good.
On the budget topic, I've had the council has had a request for input from Stuart Lynn, which was posted on the 24th of December, requesting input from the GNSO Council on the ICANN budget, and in particular that we're looking at the issue of what support the GNSO Council requires from ICANN. And I'll hand it across to Roger to lead the discussion on that and see how we can respond.
Well, actually, that's one of three items I wanted to touch on in today's report. And just on that item, I wanted to let the council know that the Budget Committee will be meeting sometime in the next week to have a fuller discussion about what we see as our budgetary requirements in the period that begins next July 1st. I think, as everyone knows, the budget arrangement that ICANN had put forward was that through June 30th, the GNSO would continue to operate basically in its own budget and continuing the practices of the DNSO, but that the new budgetary relationship in which ICANN assumed budgetary responsibility would begin on July 1st. And it is in that context that Stuart's asked for our input. I think there are two issues I would ask people to provide comments on, and they can send them to me and I'll circulate them to the committee, or they could circulate them to the entire council if they want. One is the extent of service and support that we feel that ICANN should budgetarily provide for the GNSO. Clearly, this breaks into two broad areas. One is staff support, And the second is expenses. So that examples would of staff support would be obviously a full-time professional as envisioned in the ICANN documents, but one could imagine other staff support activities, and we should be as clear as we can in setting forth the requirements that we see. The second would be expense support, and examples of that would be, you know, teleconferences, meeting rooms, magazine subscriptions, video conferences, or whatever expense areas we feel the GNSO in general and the GNSO Council in particular requires support for. So my only comment at this point is to note for the Council we will be developing something and to solicit suggestions and ideas over the next week. So
just in terms of timing to get back to, the ICANN Budget Committee, what would you see the process from there, Roger? Would you be seeing that perhaps by the February meeting you would have a proposal to be endorsed by the Council?
That's exactly. Our objective is to come back to the Council by the February meeting with a sort of scoping document that says this is based on our research and the input we've gotten, this is what we will be proposing to, or this is what we think the Council should be proposing to the ICANN Budget Committee.
Okay. And you said you had three items, so that was item one?
Item one. Item two is a proposal that has come from the Budget Committee, and I apologize, they did not circulate this in advance, and if anyone objects to it on the grounds that it's not been circulated in advance, then I'll simply hold it off for the February meeting. But it can be described verbally, I think, fairly simple, although there's a substantial amount of money involved with it. The Budget Committee recommends that the Council modify a decision that was made by the DNSO Names Council in 2001. In 2001, the DNSO Names Council agreed to voluntarily make a payment to AFNIC of $60,000 that covered the services that AFNIC had provided to the DNSO without any contractual agreement or negotiated arrangement or anything. And these AFNIC services included operating the DNSO website and managing the various DNSO Council voting activities and whatnot. The amount that the DNSO Names Council offered to AFNIC was $60,000, and AFNIC accepted that amount as a settlement of any claims that it might have in the future and the satisfactory resolution of whatever financial issues arose. But the DNSO Names Council attached several conditions to the payment of the $60,000, one of which was that AFNIC, for example, estimate how much of its costs were a result of support for the DNSO General Assembly versus how much of it cost were for the DNSO Names Council sort of allocation estimates. But the most important of the conditions the DNSO Names Council attached was one in which the Names Council required that AFNIC assign intellectual property rights to any software that had been developed by AFNIC under its contract, or under its implied contract with the DNSO and for the services that that were being paid for. The recommendation the Budget Committee is making today is that the GNSO Names Council remove and repeal any requirement that the DNSO Names Council made for a transfer of intellectual property rights that occurred in 2001. With this decision, to my knowledge, there will no longer be any outstanding issues that would prevent the payment of the $60,000 to AFNIC for services that they had provided in the year 2000, and we'll close the book on a long, sort of complicated dispute. I should point out, and Louis, I'm not sure if you're still on the call, because Louis has an important role in all of this. Louis has served in his ICANN capacity. ICANN management has obviously been the administrator of our funds, and in his capacity as the administrator of our funds, he has sought the completion of this obligation entered into a series of discussions and negotiations with AFNIC and its employees over this, which to my knowledge have not succeeded. So we could get into the legalities of it, but essentially the committee's recommendation is that we remove the condition, make the payment, and put it behind us.
Roger, Philip here, just a clarifying question. Am I right in assuming that the software in question, although at the time we deemed to have some potential value, is in fact no longer used and therefore has no particular visual value to us anyway?
I won't comment on whether the software has any value. Perhaps it has some value in the marketplace, but it has no usefulness to us. We no longer use the software, and I suppose one could make the case that if we had rights to it, we might be able to go out and sell it to Microsoft or some commercial entity, but it's my opinion that it does not have a great value, but it is a fact that we don't use it anymore.
But that's my understanding, too, that it is, in fact, something that is no use to us at all, and therefore my personal feeling is to support your suggestion completely.
Excuse me, this is Ellen. I have to sign off now. If Laurence is still on the call...
I am, Ellen.
Thank you, Laurence. If you can please take over for me for whatever is necessary.
I think Roger is right on, as is Philip's observation. There is an issue out there. I don't think there's any blame for anyone in not completing it. There is blame for everyone, but it's simply not worth pursuing the issue, in my judgment.
Okay. What I suggest we do then is, from an appropriate process point of view, I don't think we should vote on it at this meeting because the sum of money is material and it should be posted to the council list so the public can see it and we can vote on it at the next meeting. But I think the sense of the meeting, Roger, is that the council supports your recommendation and I would like to then be able to formally vote on that in our council meeting in February, if you can sort of draft a one sentence or however many sentences you need motion that we can put forward in the agenda for the next meeting.
I'll be happy to do that.
Okay.
My third point is simply a status report back to the council on the GNSO budget for 03 and first 6 months of 03. Obviously, we are under the ICANN plan, essentially self-financed. The council has already considered this and acted on it, so there's no further action needed by the council, but what's been missing is a report back to the council on exactly what the budget sort of looks like for the GNSO for the first 6 months of the year. And the reason there's been a delay on that is that we did not want to report back to the council until we had pretty firm figures on what the cash balance was at year-end 02 that carries over into 03. We now have that, and at the next meeting of the Budget Committee, we'll sort of review it and report back to the council on what the budget basically looks like, but I can give you the highlights of it so that in case there's any interest, I'd be happy to answer questions or sort of follow up on it. But in a nutshell, the council decided in the December meeting to approve an expense budget of about $45,000 for 03, excluding any funds that would be allocated for miscellaneous or reserve purposes, but in direct expenses. They also agreed on a dues structure for the six constituencies of $4,950 each. We now know that the cash carryover from 02 to 03 was about $37,000. This is, at the time of the December meeting, I was estimating conservatively, and intentionally conservatively, estimating that it would be around $20,000. So it's a good bit more than was conservatively estimated in December. And the $37,000 cash carryover combined with the funds that would be the $29,700 that would be raised from dues payments yields a total budget for the GNSO Council of $66,700 for the first 6 months of the year, of which $22,000 is for miscellaneous or unallocated. In my judgment, this provides exactly what I think the council intended in its December meeting, which is kind of a modest level of flexibility. The alternative the council considered and did not support was a high enough due structure so there was sort of significant flexibility built into it. This structure would permit, for example, a couple of constituencies to fail to make their dues payments and still leave the council and some modest unforeseen spending take place and still leave the council in a situation with a very small cash balance at the end of the six-month period. So this is a tight budget, and the Budget Committee will report back to the full council on the details of it, but I did just want to give a progress report and say that we're on the verge of sort of formalizing the results of the December decisions. And by the way, none of this has anything to do with one of the most important assets that the GNSO Council enters the year with, which is a whole lot of receivables from constituencies who have not paid in prior years. I think we have the GNSO Council probably has, well, I know it has way over $100,000 worth of debts from constituencies who have not paid in prior years. Whether that's of any value is a matter of opinion, but at least it's on our books. And if anybody, and if we ever collect on all of it, we'll be a wash in cash, as they say.
Yeah, we'll be at a flotteria.
Anyway, those are my reports, and the council will be getting several documents from the Budget Committee in the next week or so.
Okay, thank you, Roger. I think if Jay Scott's not on the call, I think I will bring the meeting to a close. Is there anything else anyone would like to raise before we close off?
Peter, just one small item of business, and it concerns the CCSO in formation. In the past, of course, we have, as a council, supported the formation of that. There is still ongoing politics related to the ITU. There's this concept of having an ITU meeting on a stand in Geneva, which the CCs are being invited. I just wondered if it might be appropriate for us to renew our endorsement and support for a CCSO and for all relevant ICANN matters to be discussed within that.
I'd like to speak in support of that, Bruce. For those of us who work at the ITU, which happens my company and a few others, I don't think Tony Holmes is on. I know he personally supports ITU study group too. There's a lot of proselytizing going on to try to pull the stakeholders away to this ITU meeting. And look at the agenda. The way the ITU works, the meetings like this will take up practically any topic anyone wants to raise. So if someone goes into this and makes a submission that they want to address intellectual property issues or stability of the Internet, that will be on the agenda. It's really a stacked deck against support for ICANN, in my view, in that it's creating a lot of confusion. And I think it would be very helpful. The way the IT works, they work on contributions. So I think it would be very helpful to have a positive statement from the council in support of ICANN and the importance of the CCLDSO and the appropriateness of working on policy issues at ICANN, and the encouraging the ITU and other multilateral organizations to support ICANN by working for the GAC.
Do you have a timing for when this message is needed? Like, can you draft something? Can we just vote on it at the next meeting?
I can draft something, but we need to vote on it by email in order to submit it in a timely fashion. The meeting is March the 3rd and 4th.
Okay.
I think we probably lost.
I'd like to make the proposal that we do exactly what Marilyn just suggested. There's no reason why we can't have.
I think so. I doubt that we have quorum at the moment. I can hear people dropping off, so I suggest if you put together your resolution, and we'll do an email vote on it. But bear in mind that it still needs to be ratified by a teleconference.
If we can get the message out there that we voted on by email, that would
What would be the procedure for a vote by email exactly? I remember that we discussed that last year.
Yeah, the process basically is it would be put to vote by email. What I did in the last time we did an email vote is I reported the email vote results and basically said this is an email vote and it will be formally ratified at the following meeting. So it allows you to let people know about the vote, but it needs to be ratified. But that,
yeah.
I think
we can.
Work.
Yeah, that's right.
But Bruce, we could vote the resolution by email, announce we've had the email vote, and
that's right.
But my question is, can we submit it for the record before it is ratified?
I think
we
can
post
just by making
the vote.
Yeah, I think you put the status on the vote, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in other words, the notion would be that the statement submitted to the ITU would say been approved by an email vote subject to ratification or something.
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
And I'll work with Philip on draft.
That's fine.
Is that okay?
That's good for me.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, if there's nothing else, I'll close the call at this point and thank everybody for attending, and especially Louie. It's been most helpful to have your support.
Well, I look forward to a long day here.
Well, my day's just starting, and at 3 o'clock this morning I got another call in a few hours' time.
Okay, bye. Okay.
Bye. Good day.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
The conference organizer has left the conference. The conference is now over.